Welcome to Great I Am Radio, raising the vibration on everyday life matters with heart and soul. Here's your host, Rebecca Johns.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Rebecca Johns, coming to you live this blessed Tuesday afternoon, May 30th, 2 p.m. Eastern. What a beautiful day. I know it's not technically summer, like technically, but it's close enough. I know some of y'all have opened up your pools already. Some of you are already packing for as soon as the kids are out of school, you're hitting the road. Whatever you're doing today, I pray it is blessed. My name is Rebecca Johns, and I come to you each week at 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio, greatiamradio.com. And I thank you. I'm grateful for this platform. I'm grateful to be able to reach out and speak to you about topics that matter. It's called Great I Am Radio because beyond the flesh and the ego of a human being is the essence of a human being. And I'm not attached to whatever religion or spiritual principles you're governed by. That's personal. Have at it. But I believe that across the board, among faiths of all types and religions of all type, there is an underlying truth, an underlying belief that people aren't just these skin sacks, that there's more to us than that. We've got a mind, we've got a heart, and I don't mean a physical organ. The passion of a person that is in their heart, and a soul, that vibrational, energetic essence that holds things up in life. And so regardless of your walk, regardless of where you've come from, what kind of background you've had, what kind of job you have, what kind of money you've had, those things don't have to stop you. It doesn't matter if you were born of poor immigrants, or as we say in the Americas, born with a silver spoon in your mouth. It doesn't matter if you came from an educated people with degrees, or if you came from simple laboring folks. I cherish stories of people like Oprah Winfrey and Michael Jordan, who came from poverty and lack, and in some cases, homes that were even devastated, but it did not stop them. They moved beyond what the limits of their households, their subcultures, their culture, maybe possibly even their own beliefs. And I believe each of us has that in us, that essence, that great I am. For you Bible folks, 1 John 4:4 is clear. My beloved children, you are overcomers because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. The spirit of creator is in you, is greater than anything in this world. And day in and day out, from the simplest things like traffic to the most epic of things like war, human beings are dealing with who we're going to choose to be and how we're going to choose to be it. And it takes time, I think. It takes maturity, maturation, if you will, to become someone. And I'm not saying that some of us don't have it in us young. I think I had it in me early. And I think the nature of spirit is that we have it in us already. But this world tends to blind us. And so it takes maturation then. It takes time and growth and evolution of a human being to become someone who's interested in humanity, in spirit, in the world. It takes time to become someone who connects with others who possibly have nothing in common with you as far as language and food preferences and religion and there's opportunities in this world, especially in this day of technology and information sharing, where with a video call, you're talking to someone on the other side of the planet. And so then it's important that we are respecters of culture, if at all possible, respecters of culture. Oftentimes, you hear me share from my own cultural perspective as someone born to immigrants who came from the Near East, persecuted for their faith, pursuing not just religious freedom, but social freedom. Christians of the Near East in a predominantly Muslim environment were put into what was similar to the South African apartheid situation. The natives of that land were walking around with passports, while the dwellers who assumed that land asserted their government over them. And so I'm sensitive. I tend to be sensitive to cultures. I tend to be sensitive to the plight of people. I tend to be considerate and curious. I want to know. What do you believe? What do your people believe? Where do your people come from? What do your people have as religion or spirituality? What do your people believe as far as parenting and family? I am a curious type. And many of you are also. If you're in my listening base, you're a lot like me. And you resonate with these messages. That's why you're here each Tuesday at 2 p.m. or listening on demand. And so as we approach the month of June, and it is happening quick, Thursday, 2 days, we will be hitting the month of June. We have something happening in America that some of you heard of, some of you haven't, some of you heard of, but it's been all wrong, child. It was all wrong. You got bad information. Some of you are familiar with what we're going to share today and have hands and feet involved. But for some of you, this is completely foreign. And it is the conversation of Juneteenth. Juneteenth, a holiday celebrated on June 19th to commemorate the emancipation of enslaved people in the United States. The holiday was first celebrated in Texas, where on this date in 1865, June 19th, in the aftermath of the Civil War, the enslaved black people of Texas were declared free under the terms of the already existing 1862 Emancipation Proclamation. Now, I don't know about you, but until I took time to become educated, I was exposed to a lot of mythology about Juneteenth. And I believe that it's an important conversation for us to have as Americans, but as people, so that we can connect with the culture and subcultures of our own country and our world. And until we are sensitive to the plight of other people, we're really disconnected from the human experience as a whole. We tend to see it from our own lens, our own narrative, our own perspective, but that's so small. And y'all know I'm a praying type. And I'll be candid, today's show was going in a completely different direction and I was going to be solo on the air. And as I prayed, I felt compelled to bring this conversation to the airwaves. And as I sat thinking about this conversation, one person, and y'all know I know a lot of people, I know a mess of people, one person in particular came to mind, and I'm bringing him on the show today. To be a voice of education, culture, and no doubt entertainment. He is a producer and a creative and a host of his own show. He's been in the radio and creative industry for decades. His name is Paul H. Herring, and he's been spearheading rich celebrations of Juneteenth in Southeast Michigan for many years. So please help me welcome him to the show, Paul the Handsome One Herring. Welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Well, hey, that was a little heavy, man. I just want to tell jokes.
I know. I'm gonna need you to just put a little bit of your serious hat on, just a little bit.
Right.
I know you keep it alive. I know you keep it alive. It's okay. We'll take the jokes too. So I asked Paul. I said, I want a bio. I want to introduce you properly on the show. And so I'm going to give you, now that he's on the air with me, I'm going to give you the cheat introduction he gave me. Ladies and gentlemen, a man who needs no introduction, Paul Herring, a.k.a. the Handsome One. Welcome to the show, Paul. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
See, did it work or not?
You like that? Did I do it?
I think it worked.
Did I emote?
You could have put a little more bass in handsome, but that's okay.
How did I know that was coming from you? How did I know? So, Paul, I know you just got off the air. Are you on the show? Are you on your show weekly or is it daily over there?
We do Eclectic Ramblings twice a week, on Tuesdays at 1 and Thursdays at 1.
Okay, great. So let's start here. Let's give the audience a little bit of an intro to who you are, why you are, who you are, and then let's segue into how Juneteenth became important for you.
Okay, not a problem at all. Listen, I am the son of Janet and William Herring. I am the husband of Angela Rochelle Kinsey Herring. And I am the father of Paul and Marcus Herring. I was born in Detroit, relocated to a small town in Boston for my first 2 years of high school, then relocated back here to Grand Blanc where I graduated. Attended the University of Michigan, Flint, where I was hired by the Shapiro family, who owned a deli in downtown Flint. From there, I was hired away by Auto World, and then I was hired away from Auto World from Water Street to Philly. And I operated the rink there at Auto World, or at Water Street Pavilion for a little bit.
Now, for those of you who are not in the Southeast Michigan area tuning in, because a lot of my audience is from elsewhere, Paul has pretty much name-dropped every iconic element of the last 40 years in Genesee County. So what did you do? I have to ask. I did a paper on Auto World way back in the day. What did you do for Auto World? Auto World, y'all, was an automotive theme park in Flint, Michigan. I probably went 5 times. What did you do there? What was your role?
I was what was known as a day off relief, which was basically I was a food service manager who would go from booth to booth when that manager had their day off. So the hot dog stand guy would get a day off and I would stand in for him. Sausage guy would get a day off and I would stand in.
You just work the circuit. Work the Auto World circuit.
I did. It was a wonderful experience. We had a good time.
You know, that was a cool era in our little city of Flint, Michigan. That was a really great era. I can't tell you
how many beers we drank on the dome there. Remember the dome?
I sure do remember the dome. Absolutely.
Yeah. It wasn't unusual for us to climb up there on the weekends.
Oh, my gosh. wild. Now, entertainment, creativity, production has been in your wheelhouse for a long time. How did that happen for you?
Oh, do you want the real story or the one that I lie about?
Whichever one you want to be remembered for is the way I'm going to say that.
That's how I'm getting there. I couldn't even get interviews for jobs. So I just interviews up. So I started a show on public access. Actually, I took over a show. I got involved with public access. And I started working with Dan Kildee and Ken Hannon and Valerie Clark on a show called Common Ground. At the time, Dan
Kildee was the
host. Oh, wow.
I remember that show. That's right. Yeah. I remember that.
So I started out with them as a camera operator. 2 weeks in, Dan decided to run for some office, and the rule said he couldn't be on TV. So they looked at me and asked me if I wanted to start hosting it. So 2 weeks in, I started hosting the show. And then another 2 weeks came, and they got a grant to go to Poland to do a documentary, and they asked me if I wanted to start producing the show. So I said yes, and I started producing the show, and I was looking for work at the time and couldn't get any interviews, so I started interviewing the people that I wanted to work for.
Did you end up getting any work?
Yes, and that's even a stupider coincidence. I borrowed the keys to a cabin up north, right? A friend of mine's cabin, and I took a friend up there, and we're hanging out in the cabin, and early in the morning, like 7 in the morning, there's a knock on the door. And I answer the door, and the lady says, "What are you doing in my house?" And I said, "Oh, my goodness, I didn't know it was your house. I got the keys from my friend Devere." He says, "Oh, okay, Devere, no problem, baby, no problem." Well, to make a long story short, she was the president of the NAACP and also worked for Fun Odyssey House in the Health Awareness Center. And I ended up having an interview with her that following Monday. So it was just happenstance. I happened to meet her on Saturday morning at her house up in Ida Wild, Michigan. So needless to say, the interview went well. And I got the job.
Remarkable. So what was your work with them?
I was the Coalition for Positive Youth Development recruiter and program. We used to do what we called Freedom Trails, and we'd take kids on buses and retrace the Underground Railroad and end up in Dresden, Canada. We took kids to the AXO competition. Are you familiar with AXO?
Yes.
Okay, we used to take kids every year. Actually, they still do. Ellington Moulton is still heavily involved with that, and they're always looking for
kids
to get involved.
I was just going to ask if any of this that you're talking about is still going on, that people can be involved who are listening that are interested.
Oh, definitely. AXO is a must-do for any high schooler. I mean, they have such a variety of programs you can get involved with. It's the Academic, Cultural, Technological Olympics of the Mind. So they try to make it like a baseball, basketball, football competition, but with knowledge and art and technology. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
And you can access
that
through the NAACP's website, I'm sure.
Okay, great. And I encourage you, those of you who are listening, you know, I know some of you have already reached out and said, you know, "Rebecca, I'm really excited that you're taking on this conversation. I'd like to make myself more aware, make my community more aware." As Paul is suggesting, please go to the NAACP website and discover not just the education that's available on the website that you can learn from. They've got articles, clips, blogs, but there's also opportunities to participate. Okay, great. How long did you do that?
Oh, goodness. I took my youngest to work with me in a bassinet. So I'm going to say I was there about maybe 6 years. Six or seven years, maybe.
Yeah.
Was there anything that really surprised you about that being in that community and in that role? Is there anything that really stood out and surprised you about that job?
I was surprised that more people didn't take advantage of the opportunities. I mean, we took kids all over the place at no cost to them, you know, and from New York to Pennsylvania, Los Angeles. We did Underground Rail. We had another one called Tour Michigan. And we'd take them on a bus, and we would go around Michigan, around the coast, all the way up to Mackinac, and then down the other side, stopping at every historical landmark along the way.
That's extraordinary.
It was wonderful. The bus that we used, not so much.
I have a feeling it was pretty dated.
Yeah, it was a Bluebird from the 60s, maybe, early 70s. Yeah. I knew how to fix it, so that's how old it was.
So you come off the road with that role, and where do you go next?
Well, after that, I was really heavy into the public access. I had maybe four or five shows up and running, and I think I had started doing the council meetings. So I just decided to open my own, you know, operation. Comcast wouldn't let us store equipment at their studio, so I was able to buy a house in Georgetown that had a building attached to it, so I created my own studio. I was able to store my own stuff there, and they would bring their truck to my place or the remote location that I wanted to shoot at, and I would produce television.
So you're not afraid to carve out your own path anywhere at any time.
You know, it's been a wonderful adventure. I chuckle almost every day at what's taken place in my life.
So that H isn't just for handsome, it's for happy also.
You know, what are your choices? You can either be miserable or you can be happy.
Yeah,
there's enough misery.
Right.
You know, there's
there
enough
really
misery
is
in it. And between you and me, misery's not fun.
Right. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt, really not interested in another one. So you ready to talk emancipation?
Well, Juneteenth, near and dear to my heart, man. I went to the Million Man March myself.
Mm.
My elder mentor, Milt Vaze, I think he was like 70 at the time. And then the host of my show, who is now one of the world famous spinners, Jesse Peck. We went to the Million Man March. And, you know, one of the messages that they said was, you know, don't go home and reinvent the wheel. It says go and join an organization that exists. And they said if you don't like the way it's run, take it over. Just, you know, don't don't make anything new. So I came back to Flint, and I got involved. We had a group called the Million Man, the Millionth Man. And Woodrow Stanley, Norm Bryant, what was that man's name? Doggone it, I'm going to miss it. It was Bryant Nola's dad. What did they call him? He just started meeting on the Rigby. And the NAACP, well, I told you I bought a house in Carriagetown. I'm going to say it was like 1989. I heard a bunch of noise outside the front of the house. And I looked out, and there was just this little parade coming past the house, and they had a banner that said Juneteenth on it. And I remember a guy telling me about Juneteenth at one of the Millions Man meetings. So I looked into it, and that was Mrs. E. Hill Deloney. And she had been doing Juneteenth here in the city of Flint for a couple of years prior to me getting involved. So through her, I started working on the Juneteenth celebration. And as the years went on, I got more and more involved, and I took on the publishing of the Juneteenth tabloid, which Brother Lee Williams, I don't know if you remember him, from the city of Flint started. And then we started doing concerts in Riverbank Park. We had all sorts of events. It was great. And actually, I kind of stepped away from organizing and planning the celebrations locally, and I'm trying to find a niche in Juneteenth somewhere else.
It's funny you should lead me into my next question. I know you from Flint Town, of course, and I've attended several of the Juneteenth celebrations that you have been part of spearheading. What is your interest for going beyond this area?
You know, I've always had a vision, actually a production in mind, where I traveled to as many cities as I could on the 19th of June, or as to as many Juneteenth celebrations, because, you know, every place doesn't celebrate it on the 19th, because according to lore,
sure.
Gordon Granger landed in different places at different times. So he might have been in Houston on the 13th and Dallas on the 15th, and then, you know, so on and so forth till he got to Galveston, and Lord knows where he was before then. So I think
we're going to talk about that more. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We've got a funny connection, and so there's a little bit of a delay beyond the typical 7-second delay. We've got a little bit more delay than that.
Does that mean I can talk about lore?
You know the beauty of Blog Talk Radio? Blog Talk Radio, which is the platform I'm on currently, they let you put a rating on your program, and it's really funny you should say that. Because I opted for PG today, but right before I clicked PG, I was like, but Paul and me, this could go. I don't think the audience understands what happens when people like us get together. This could go places. I might have to recreate my platform a little bit.
I can keep it PG. Come on.
So I went with PG. So I apologize. I know there's a little bit of a delay between us. I apologize for that. And, of course, this would be mowing day at my property. So if you hear background noise, that's what's going on. The guy just keeps riding back and forth in front of my window, and I'm thinking, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that wasn't part of the plan. So I would like us to talk about, I would like us to address the lore, if we could, just for a moment, because I want to talk about your vision. You sent me that video, and I think that's part of what you're talking about here, and I'd like to talk about that a little more in depth and kind of close with that, because, like I said, our listening audience is all over the place. And given that this is kind of a direction you're going, is to reach beyond the local, I would love, and this is a call out to y'all that are listening, I would love if y'all would listen to what Paul is up to in his vision for the future, so that you can give consideration to what you have in your area to invite him to attend. So let's just hold on to that conversation for a second, because that's going to be really, really good, and I'm really glad you're doing that. But let's talk about lore for a second, if we could. Some of the myths about Juneteenth was that although the emancipation took place in a few years prior, that the Texas slaves didn't learn they were freed until 1865. But that's not necessarily true. Can you give us an understanding of what happened historically and what marks this as such an important date in history?
Well, you know, we all know politics is a brutally slow game, right? So even though he made the emancipation in 62, by the time it went into effect, by the time they realized that the Texas ranchers weren't going to abide by it, 2.5 years had passed. That's when they sent General Gordon Granger out with General Order 3 to announce to those slave-holding states that they had to let those people go.
So it wasn't that people didn't know. It's that the emancipation had been made by, at that time, it was President Abraham Lincoln. He'd made the Emancipation Proclamation.
Were people just simply
resisting it? I mean, the people in Texas, they were just blatantly resisting the national order from our president, whereby keeping Texas gridlocked with like 250,000 slaves.
Well, this guy comes to your door or knocks on your door and your Walmart, and he says, hey, man, you got to let all your employees go. They're going to be a little resistant to that. You know, some say, sure, mm-hmm. I'll let them know. You have a good day, and never said a blooming word. I mean, the rumors have it that the messengers that initially tried to deliver the message either were bribed off or killed, because those ranchers, they were vested. They were vested in those. Their livelihood, you know what I mean? Southern people during the Civil War had actually hidden their slaves in Texas because of the fear that they were going to lose the war.
And, you know, I want people who are listening, and I have a pretty, you know, I have a pretty high vibe tribe, Paul. I'm not gloating. I just mean that my people are not thinkers like this. But I'm going to say this. There are people who even today, and definitely at that time, considered their black slaves cogs in the wheel, and having your slave set free would be like having your car jacked. Like, you're not taking my stuff.
That's your car,
stuff.
You're,
you're not taking my
horse,
stuff.
Your donkey, your pig, your cow, your goat.
It is your means by which you accomplish getting from point A to point B and accomplishing your task. They might as well stole the windmill. That's a cog in the wheel of production, you know? They weren't happy, and there was more battle done over this. And you know, I appreciate you putting in context. I do want people to understand. Imagine being the messenger. Imagine taking this message from our national government into these local areas. And I mean, bribed would be a good day, but you're right. Tortured and killed would probably be the route some of these folks were taken, because you're not going to mess up our good thing. So Major General Gordon Granger, June 19th, 1865, is the date that is cited as the day he stepped out on the balcony of the Ashton Villa, a home that had previously served as the headquarters for the rebel army in the region during the war. And as Paul said, he delivered General Orders Number 3, which said this: the people of Texas are informed that, in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor. The freedmen are advised to remain quietly at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military posts and that they will not be supported in idleness either there or elsewhere. What does that emancipation say to you, mean to you, land with you? How does it land for you?
For the black in me, I smile. For the hecking off that came from the slave owners, I cringe. I'm sure there was hell to pay for a lot of people once that was red. Some of the less nice slave owners probably resorted to violence to keep their property. And
the article I'm reading from is on lincolncottage.org. If anyone would like to go and read that, Juneteenth, the Emancipation of Enslaved Texans, it says, despite the continuing repression of their civil and political rights, African Americans in Texas continued to celebrate Juneteenth. In communities across the state, freedmen pooled money together to purchase plots of land and set them aside as emancipation parks. One such instance occurred in Houston, not far from Galveston, in 1872, and the park remains to this day known as Emancipation Park. It's a landmark there in that area. There's a picture on the website. You can go and visit it physically.
Well, here's another here's another piece of lore. In the heyday of the Ku Klux Klan, the Juneteenth celebrations had to go underground, and they reinvented themselves as rodeos and family reunions.
Okay, Paul Herring. That's a new one on me. Okay. I thought I was red. I thought I learned. I thought I was already learned. All right. Good one. So wait. Are you suggesting that what we currently know as rodeos derived from that, or are you suggesting that they were able to camouflage themselves among rodeos like
rodeos.
The ones we know today?
Exactly. It was already a large group of people showing up, and they just had
their little
party.
So they just camouflaged it in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my word. That's great. You know, and you, I know you came on, you were wrapping up your show as I was starting this one, so you didn't quite hear my intro, but Great I Am Radio, as I was saying earlier, the whole Great I Am, I mean, I grabbed it from 1 John 4:4, my beloved children, you are overcomers, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And it's the human spirit. I don't care what religious path you choose. I'm talking about the human spirit. And what you just shared is such a great expression of the Great I Am. Like, you know what? You won't hold us down. Life finds a way. The human spirit is tenacious and creative and powerful. And so I love that that's even part of that history, because, you know, truth is always freedom. Freedom is always truth. And it might have to shift and move, but you can't make it go away.
Right.
And
you know, before this conversation is over, I really need to acknowledge Catherine Blake, who was like the second person to die of COVID here in the city of Flint, and Sister Janice Muhammad, who died 3 hours after Juneteenth was made a national holiday. They were my right and left hand with the Juneteenth Committee, and I lost them both within 9 months.
Oh, God bless you.
Yeah.
God bless you. And God bless them.
Oh, for sure. I'm almost certain that Sister Janice was aware that it was made a national holiday before she passed, but I know Catherine did not. And that was what we were striving for all the years that we were doing it. So I'm mission accomplished, baby. Mission accomplished.
Man, God bless you, Paul. When did Juneteenth become declared nationally a holiday?
Last year. Year before 2021?
Uh-huh.
2021, I believe.
Yeah, I thought
wrong.
It was 2020 or 2021. Yeah.
I mean, it was just, you know.
You're right. You're right. It was 2021. Yep. Sure was.
Okay.
And earliest celebrations date to 1866. So this is a long time coming, given the federal emancipation was made in 1862. So
Well, I don't think Texas made it a state holiday until 1989.
Hmm.
And I think Iowa and Idaho and all those weird countries, states over there were before even Texas and celebrated. And so I, if I'm getting my numbers right, I'm trying to remember. I just looked up that page.
Yeah, Juneteenth became a state holiday in Texas in 1980, and a number of states subsequently followed thereafter, but it was a trickle effect, for sure. You know, what is it, man? I mean, we drank the same water, okay? So I know you and I are cool, but what is it, man? What is it that makes us so resistant to just look at each other and be like, I see you? I accept you. Like, I'll give you room on this planet. Let me just make room for you. You know, it doesn't take much. I can move out the way at the grocery store and give you room. I can move over on the road and give you and your car room. I can move, you know, like, I can make room for you. Why can't we make room for each other, man?
I think the problem is our programming. And our programming has gotten even worse with the internet and the C-SPANs and the Foxes and the CNNs and the things that people think are news. You know, if you realize it's no different than Seinfeld or the Brady Bunch, then
that's
you're
right.
Okay. But when you start to think it's the news, it causes some serious problems. And, you know, mob mentality is just that. And despite the fact that they can't subliminally advertise to you and subliminally do things, they do it out and out. Out and out. You know, it's all about having this and having that. I was reading a book about before marketing. You know, there was a time before marketing when people didn't want stuff. They didn't want stuff. They invented the need to need.
Oof. Wow, the creation of the commercialism of manufacturing demand.
People have been wicked for a long time.
Who invented that?
And they don't look like me.
Who invented that?
Well,
right.
I'm going to give you a hint. They used to wear powdered wigs, if that'll help.
You know, I was just talking the other day to some people who would qualify in generic terms as white. And as someone who is very proudly representing my own ethnicity of Assyrian and the Semitic culture and the language, the Aramaic language, you know, I'm proud of, you know, the jalapeno pepper that I am. If you're a potato, be a potato. If you're a banana, be that banana, baby. Like, I'm all for the whole produce section. You know, I love all the fruits and vegetables. But we were talking about how distorting it is today and has been for so long since we have made generic so much about each other and ourselves. And I said to this group of people, I said, I kind of feel sorry for you as white people. And they looked at me with kind of shock. And I said,
they had a good run, didn't they? They had a good run, didn't they?
I said, well, you know, here was my point. Because, you know, let me just be forthcoming. You know, my husband is quote-unquote white. And so I look at my kids, and my kids growing up in a culture that, you know, I have to break it down and get real because I can't just be generically and say things about white people. My kids are white. My husband's white. I got to pay attention. And I've been paying attention as I've allowed my kids to go back into public school. We live in a great little town. They've got a great school system. Anything that I have issue with, I can take it directly to where I need to, but it's very rare to nothing. And anything else is my job to educate my kids anyway, so I'm good with it. But small town, 7,000 to 8,000 people. And but we homeschooled for a long time, and for the direct purpose of not allowing our children to fall into the sheeple category of things. But as they've been studying American history in their 5th and 8th grades respectively, we have recently tapped on emancipation and when the slaves were freed.
And I think it's important to understand something. There's a difference between what we should call
I want to stop you there for a second. And the proper term is enslaved people.
Enslaved people.
You can't call them slaves. Yes, yes.
Okay.
They were enslaved people.
So
they weren't slaves.
Okay, very good. I appreciate that. I'll take that, right? That's just part of our growth. And this is part of what I'm talking about. This is exactly, you put your finger on it. You know, there was a time when there was no conversation about white people and black people because there was no quote-unquote white people. You couldn't call an Irish a Brit and think it was the same thing. They'd bust your lips. That was offensive. Irishmen were Irishmen. Scotsmen were Scotsmen. The men that were British were British. They each, among their own individual groups, had pride of what they were. And when the enslaved people were freed and became freedmen, it was the elite that went to the Irish and the Scotsman and the Brit and said, hey, brethren, the dark-skinned folks are free and they're going to take what's yours. We ought to get into some cahoots together. And they began, and that's where marketing, hello, they branded white people. They branded black people. They created a system based on skin color that until the people who were enslaved became free, it was all about, I'm Irish, I'm not, I'm Scottish, okay, well, I'm British, okay, well, it was all about the individuals, even though the melanin may have all looked the same. So the people who, when you say they had a good run, I want to assert that those who've had a good run are the elite, the ones who have used skin and outward person to manipulate and brand us against each other. That is what I believe is coming to an end. That is what I believe we are shaking up. And that is why I want to close our program in talking about your vision for Juneteenth for the future, because your vision for Juneteenth for the future is going to, I believe, genuinely upgrade us culturally so that we can connect to each other on a greater scale, on a deeper level. Can you feel where I'm coming from, and can it take us with that?
No,
do you feel differently?
That's too much pressure. That's too much pressure. Oh my God, I can't bear the weight of that on my shoulders. Come on, yeah. Listen, one of my favorite things is, listen, I'm enjoying the life that I'm living, just until I can live the life I'll enjoy. Okay. So whatever I'm doing, I'm going to make sure I enjoy doing it. And if it's traveling around the United States, going to Juneteenth festivals in the month of June, then so be it. If it's traveling to Europe, looking to have a mimosa with my son in Milan on the 19th of June, then that's what it's going to be. We're going to have fun with this. And hopefully people will enjoy the fun that I have.
But you're going to be documenting it. Are you going to be airing it on Spectacle TV, or is it going to be someplace else?
Well, the plan now is to have the audience choose where I go. I don't have to be anywhere until the 19th of June.
Right.
So while
and
I'm over there, I don't care if I go to Prague. I don't care if I go to, Rotterdam or Hamburg I'm thinking Zermatt, Switzerland. The goal was just to make everything an overnight train.
So this is where I'd like to invite my audience to participate on your Spectacle TV channel on YouTube and get connected to your platform. Because we've really got people across the country and in some parts of the world. And I think,
nice.
You know, although you're, you know, I know you're, listen, As many times as I've seen Paul in person and online, he's always smiling, okay? I mean, genuinely, you bring the presence of joy. Where you go, there is joy. So I know that people are going to have a great time
connecting with you. I already know that. I'm excited, though, for the richness of what you and your predecessors and your colleagues have built. I'm really looking for that to gain roots. I want people to run with you and play with that and invite you into their communities and allow the success you've had through the ranks, really, Paul. I mean, as I was listening to you tell your story, I'm like, you're kind of the general of your own army, so to speak, you know? And I really do pray it's a blessed journey for you with what you're doing. And I hope you get to see some really great places. So my challenge to my audience is invite Paul, the handsome one, Herring, to your Juneteenth celebration, whether it's happening on the 5th or the 30th in the month of June, invite him. He'll let you know what he can do and what he can't. And I hope you get a bunch of different invitations and you have a hard time deciding. What's going to be the deciding factor?
Well, I need members, I need sponsors, I need subscribers, and we're going to put polls up and we're going to ask, hey, should I go here or should I go there? I'll even take suggestions. We offer memberships on the channel. We offer a variety of levels to support the things that I'm doing, from like $1.99 to $20. So there's something for everybody there. It should be a good time. I am so lackadaisical about my plan that I'm scared. You know what I mean? I don't think I've thought
I'm scared for you.
Properly.
Okay, I'm scared for you. Right. I'm like, okay, so, Prague, bro, Prague. Okay,
and,
okay,
and,
you said
right,
it.
And where do you put bail money when you're overseas? I don't know. I was looking at the map, and I've always wanted to go to Africa, and I can get so close in Gibraltar that it's like going over to Canada from Detroit. But it's Tangier, and I'm looking at Tangier. I went to Google Maps, and I dropped the little guy down on the street. And the minute he hit the street, I said, "Nope, I'm not going there."
Next.
I've seen desert before. I don't need that. No. We need a resort or something. It was just barren everywhere. I just turned
all
around
right.
that little guy.
All right, so
We'd like
to specifically request our brothers and sisters in Hawaii, perhaps, to invite Paul.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Ooh, something tropical.
Listen, I made a vow when I went into ministry, and it was not a vow of poverty, okay? And so I don't necessarily like to rough it unnecessarily. If I could have some kingdom luxury, I'm down with that. So I really hope that as you travel and the places you see, the people you get to hang out with, you are comfortable.
Well,
and,
listen, my sponsors and underwriters are going to determine that. Right now, I'm actually taking the money that I would have spent on producing the Juneteenth tabloid, which is $2,000,
okay,
to take this trip. So I've got a little less than $100 a day to spend.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure
yeah.
I can do it. I mean, that's part of the challenge. What the heck, you know? But I am afraid and excited and genuinely charged at the possibilities.
I'm so excited for you. And I'm, you know, Paul, we kind of know each other on the outskirts of community, but I want you to know I'm so proud of you. Your story needs to be told more often, and people need to understand that real people make a real difference. And you are someone who's just
okay. I'm
going to
stop you there.
So
I'm
going
to stop
real.
You there, and I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you to reach out to the Hallmark Channel and see what they'll do. You know what that?
All right.
I think that could be a Hallmark movie. What do you think? Actually, I am. I'm trying to write a movie, and it's a movie about Juneteenth.
Yeah.
And I've got the opening down pat, and I've got the song in mind, but I haven't written it. And the song is called "I'ma Die." And in the beginning, we're in an African village, and the traditional apple pie in the window cooling, and the young man and his friends grab the pie and run. And jovially, they're singing about how they're going to die, how mama's going to kill us for stealing this pie, we're going to die, blah, blah, blah. But before they can get to eat the pie, the slave catchers come and grab them. And as they walk to the door of no return, they're singing the same song, but it's a lot more melancholy. Oh, no, you know, unknowing what's going to go on. And then as they cross the middle passage, the song gets a little darker and darker. And then the slave market gets a little darker. And then finally, in the fields, it gets to the point where it's not dark, but it's resolute. And they're saying, we're going to die. We're going to die, but we're going to take some of these fools out with us. And they start to march into town to that fort. And as they enter towards the fort, the soldiers perk, and they see their family members surrounded by the soldiers. And hey, it's on and popping. We're going to die. And then General Gordon Granger announces that the slaves have been freed, that the enslaved people have been freed, and a big stamp comes down and says, boom, Juneteenth.
Wow.
No, that's all I got so far.
So beautiful. So beautiful. Well, I hope that the people who've heard this today and who will listen to it on demand later will appreciate your heart. You know, I know you've got a big laugh and a jovial personality, but I hope what they're left with more than that is the big heart that you have and the passion for your people, for your culture, for the acknowledgement of what has been and what is and what will be. And I invite anyone else who has this kind of story. As I said, I cherish representing my ethnic culture. I want you to cherish representing your ethnic culture, whatever it is, and I would love to hear your story if you've got a story to tell and a message to share and a mission that you're on, like Paul Herring. And Paul, I really appreciate you being with me today. I'm going to make sure that Spectacle TV is linked with each of these, each place we put this episode on the internet. And I would love to have you back again when you've had some journeys and have some stories to tell us. But I'll be writing Hallmark. I'll be copying you on it. You'll get it.
Nice. Make sure you play the commercial and encourage them to subscribe. Become an underwriter, sponsor, member, whatever they can do to support the cause is always appreciated. And much love for having me on your show.
Much love to you, buddy. God bless you. Take care. Peace.
Peace.
All right, y'all. That was Paul the Handsome One Herring. Go to Spectacle TV on YouTube. You're going to see it, that channel link pasted everywhere that this episode goes. And challenge Paul. Something awesome, something big. Go subscribe so that he's got those funding streams to be able to take the vision of experiencing Juneteenth in different places possible and bridging communities, bridging cultures. And you know what? I say that that's healing. And that is the grit I am. See you next time. Peace.